A successful physician loses everything to alcohol despite a seemingly perfect childhood. A corporate attorney turns to cocaine after a single professional mistake. A mother secretly abuses pills while hosting the perfect family gathering. What makes intelligent, capable people continue behaviors that devastate their lives? The answer isn't weakness, lack of willpower, or damaged brains. It's something far more human and understandable. Addiction operates as an emotional survival mechanism, a desperate attempt to reclaim power when life feels unbearably out of control. This understanding transforms addiction from a moral failing into a psychological puzzle we can actually solve. Think about the last time you felt truly trapped, stuck in traffic when running late, or silenced in a meeting where your ideas were dismissed. That flash of fury you felt? That's the same force driving addiction, except magnified 1,000 times. Addiction fundamentally serves one purpose: reversing profound feelings of helplessness connected to something deeply meaningful in your life. Ron's story illuminates this pattern. As a child, his parents constantly interrupted his Lego building or ignored his distress during their fights. 20 years later, when competing work demands left him feeling trapped, his disproportionate rage and decision to drink traced directly back to those childhood wounds. The remarkable part? Relief came not from alcohol itself, but from the decision to drink. That choice restored his sense of control. This explains addiction's characteristic intensity. Like someone trapped in a cave-in desperately clawing at rocks despite bloody hands, the fury represents a survival response to feeling trapped. The specific addiction, whether alcohol, gambling, sex, or shopping, often matters less than its function as a substitute action when direct responses feel impossible. Before addressing potential addiction, accurate diagnosis is essential. The key question: when does the urge arise? Does it emerge when feeling helpless, insulted, excluded, or emotionally overwhelmed? True addiction must be distinguished from habits and physical dependence. Michelle's coffee drinking was pure habit, automatic behavior tied to routine without deeper emotional meaning. When her doctor warned coffee threatened her health, she quit, despite difficulty. This rational choice was possible because her behavior wasn't addressing complex emotional needs. Physical addiction operates differently. Millions quit smoking after the Surgeon General's warnings, despite nicotine's addictiveness. Most dramatically, over 90% of soldiers who became physically dependent on heroin in Vietnam never used narcotics again after returning home, unlike stateside addicts whose use was psychologically driven. Many addictions involve no physical dependence whatsoever, yet people regularly substitute between addictions, confirming they serve the same psychological function. The popular brain disease model fails with humans. Unlike rats in experiments, when people are withdrawn from narcotics after medical use or situations like Vietnam, very few become addicts. Our complex psychology allows us to process feelings in ways rats cannot. The critical moment in addiction isn't when the act occurs. By then, the drive is too powerful to manage. The key is catching the thought when it first emerges, possibly days earlier, before it gains momentum. Marjorie's case illustrates this perfectly. Her self-imposed role as perfect caretaker created an internal prison where expressing needs felt morally wrong. The pivotal moment happened Wednesday while planning for weekend guests, not Sunday when she took the pills. Stephen's alcoholism shows how we disguise these moments. When he chose the supermarket near a liquor store, rationalizing he needed other things, he'd already taken the first step toward drinking without consciously acknowledging it. Brian declared, "There will be no porn tomorrow," without realizing this declaration itself signaled he was already thinking about it. We conceal warning signs through defensive patterns. Karen uses confusion as her primary defense, becoming mentally foggy when anxious, preventing her from recognizing when she's heading toward a binge. Identifying your defensive style, whether pushing thoughts away, rationalizing, intellectualizing, or becoming unclear, helps catch the key moment before it overwhelms you. Understanding the triggering moment is essential to mastering addiction. Daniel, a physician with a seemingly ideal childhood, was desperately unhappy. His mother punished him for getting dirty, his brother dominated him physically, and his father ignored his pleas for help. When a contractor abandons Daniel's garage project after taking advance payment, Daniel broke his week-long sobriety within 30 minutes. The trigger wasn't frustration about the unfinished garage. It was feeling helpless and trapped, unable to act. His weak reaction mirrored his childhood adaptation of obedience when beaten down. Matthew, a powerful corporate attorney, experienced crisis when his advice to a junior partner backfired, causing the firm to lose a major client. This struck at his core vulnerability, the need to always be right. Growing up with an immigrant father who built a successful business despite lacking formal education, Matthew absorbed intense pressure to achieve perfection. When confronted with being publicly wrong, Matthew experienced overwhelming shame and helplessness, triggering his cocaine binge. Breaking addiction's grip requires recognizing when feelings of helplessness arise and taking immediate action. When Marjorie felt overwhelmed planning an unwanted party, she could have asked guests to bring food, shortened the visit, or canceled altogether. Eric, a functional alcoholic with 2 DUI arrests, remained silent during a heated meeting despite having strong opinions. Feeling humiliated, he drank heavily that night. Later, at a baseball game when friends wanted to leave early, Eric recognized the familiar pattern. Instead of capitulating, he asserted himself, "You go on, I'm going to stay a while." This simple act prevented his drinking. 3 effective strategies include: just go away. Sometimes leaving prevents powerlessness. Do what you like. Deliberately making time for enjoyable activities counters forced situations. It's never too late. Taking action afterward, like writing an email expressing thoughts after a difficult meeting, still addresses helplessness. For long-term freedom, understand your trap's roots. Donald immediately thought about cocaine after a job rejection because he interpreted disappointments as proof of failure. Identifying this emotional pattern could have helped him anticipate unbearable feelings and prepare emotionally, potentially preventing addictive urges altogether. Addiction isn't moral weakness. It's emotionally driven compulsive behavior. The enabling concept is flawed. Tough love fails because consequences don't stop addiction, and preventing consequences doesn't encourage it. Whether to cover for a partner depends on context, not rigid rules. Phyllis and Peter Bryant's marriage deteriorated as Peter's drinking worsened. For Phyllis, his lying destroyed their trust more than the drinking itself. But Peter's lies stemmed from shame and were inseparable from his addiction, not evidence he'd stopped loving her. The crucial test, examining behavior in areas unconnected to addiction, reveals true feelings. With children involved, challenges multiply. When addiction makes a parent unpredictable, it threatens the child's fundamental sense of safety. The critical task is explaining addiction in accessible terms, helping children understand it as a sign of upset feelings rather than moral failing, while validating their anger and sadness as normal. Addiction isn't weakness. It's being human, facing overwhelming helplessness. Your addiction doesn't define you. It reveals where you've been trapped, where your power was stolen. You're not broken. You're someone who found a way to survive emotional impossibility. Now you can find better ways, not by fighting yourself, but by understanding yourself. That understanding is where true freedom begins.